Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
Tuesday, 17 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Petty Radenhaes, volatility in the crypto world. Is this an opportunity? We'll put that question to him. Chris Gutter, CEO at Astral Results, earnings surge off last year's low base. And then Vikas Latakhan, CEO Colgrey M3, as they swing into significant profit from last year's loss. It's been a tough number of years, but certainly they seem to be out of the woods. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Robex maintains record 17.1 billion rand order book, produces strong results and expecting further significant project awards. Business Day, Ultron Banks and Proprietary Systems to weather economic headwinds. IT services management company share price rallies as it says it expects more growth. Markets overnight, US was red, S&P down 0.4, Nasdaq off 1.2%. This morning in Asia, green, Sydney up 0.1, Tokyo up 0.2%. Commodities green overnight, gold 1823, Brent $1,014.11, platinum $928, palladium $2,003 an ounce, rand 1612 against the dollar. Top 40 opening call about 580 points. That's almost 0.9% higher. That is 10 cent trades up 3.25% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Petri Radenhaes from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. It's been a wild, wild 10 days for crypto. And I'm thinking, you know, particularly like the Luna Terra algorithmic stablecoin has collapsed into a heap, bouncing back a bit. I don't want to head into that sort of set of woods. Bitcoin, trading 30,000, a little above, a little below, $30,000 a coin. Is this a place where you would be buying Bitcoin?
Good morning. And no. Look, I still sort of stand by my theorem around the 4-year sort of halving cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, you know, I have to admit that I did not get the sort of forecast exactly right. My initial forecast was that we probably see somewhere around $200,000 a coin in December of last year. We did not. We got up to, I think, the high 68,000, but mm-hmm. no higher than that. That said, you know, if that theorem holds true, we do have a year-long sort of downtrend followed by years of sideways and then the recovery. So for now, for this remainder of this year, I probably won't be a buyer unless we see Bitcoin sort of below $20,000. Potentially $15,000 as a buying point. I think, you know, the Terra Luna situation is one that really can't be ignored. I know that the Bitcoin maximalists will say that, yes, you know, Bitcoin has been through many, many shocks. Cryptocurrency in general have been through many shocks, and, you know, it's still here. But I think that what's happened with this Terra Luna thing is just really it destroys trust in the ecosystem. Yeah. At least it is for me, right?
And it's that trust that's important. And I mean, I take your point around weakness. I'm zooming out. I'm looking at a history of Bitcoin chart back over the last decade plus. And you're spot on about those periods of weakness after those strong rallies. But there is that bigger issue around trust. And it's certainly trust in Terra Luna, but also perhaps in the broader crypto space as well.
I think what's happened is that, I mean, and I've said this a number of times before, there are like two or three coins that I quote-unquote trust, and that's Bitcoin, Ethereum, maybe Litecoin, right? Mm-hmm. But beyond that, there are so many different cryptocurrencies that just popped up, and I think what we forget is that, and, you know, to a large extent, Bitcoin as well, it's not as decentralized as we think. Yes, potentially, you know, yes, it's run by a decentralized network, but the majority of the coins belong to one wallet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And with a lot of these sort of newer, smaller cryptocurrencies that popped up, things like Terra Luna, you know, it has a founder. And there's some guy out there that's holding a huge amount of stuff. And every time they sort of keep minting more coins, it's kind of like an IPO, right? Mm-hmm. So you're backing some founder, which in a lot of cases, people are very focused on, how cool the coin project is or whatever the case or the crypto project is. But, ultimately, when these things rally really hard, individuals get insanely rich. And we've seen that with some of the coins. I think that there was there's a few examples last year as well where the infamous rug pull happened, where sort of individuals kind of spend a huge amount of money on marketing and distributing their coin and getting people really excited, and then they liquidate their holdings and the things collapse, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was – I don't think the case with the Terra Luna, but at the end of the day, these are – I almost want to say, semi-privately owned currencies, right? Simply because one or two players have significant stakes in them. And I don't know if that's really kind of in the spirit of a decentralized payment method, right?
I take your point in that, moving away from the sort of ethos of where Bitcoin started all those, a decade ago, and the whole sort of plan behind it. As you say, decentralized, that's not really applicable when suddenly someone's walking away with billions and owns a chunk of it. We'll leave it there. Petra Redden has Herenia Capital Advisors, and that's our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter. Petra wants to buy much lower. He says maybe 15,000. You're buying here? You got enough? Maybe crypto not for you. Have your vote, have your say.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Chris Kitter, CEO of Astral. They had results out for 6 months ending March. It saw revenue up 26%, headline earnings per share up 138%, and dividend of R7.90, that up from R3 in the previous period. Chris, appreciate the time today. I want to dig into some of the details, but the key point is the massive leverage that you're seeing from revenue to headline earnings per share, and it surprises me because you've got significant input cost pressures on the maize side.
Good day. Yeah. I think one should just put it in context. This is versus a prior period that was very bad, where we had negative margins on our broiler business. So this time round, we've got a slightly positive, just above 4% margins. And that was mainly a catch-up. We had price decreases during the hard lockdown, and we tried to catch up with those, and then also to recover some of the input costs. So, however, the profits look great versus the prior period, it's still below our average performance. But we were able to pass on some prices and costs to the consumer, unfortunately. But that's also good to have a sustainable poultry business for the long run.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Your broiler sales up 15.7%. You've mentioned, obviously, it's the comparative period. The previous would have been to March 2021. We had hard lockdowns, and then we had curfews and the like. So, QSR was under pressure. Is that just the bounce back, or some of this also improved efficiencies from operations and improved outputs?
Simon, so if we just go back a bit, we always say when we make profits, we pay our taxes, we try and do a 2% dividend cover, but all the other money, the historic profit, we put back into the business. So we had quite serious improvements in our business with regard to efficiency investment and also expansion at our Olifantsfontein, and that all came to fruition now. So we spent over R1 billion over the last 2.5 years, and part of this is obviously the volume increase that is now in lieu of that investment, But we also sold a bit out of stock. We had quite high ending stocks at the previous period. So we sold higher production volumes out of stock. And then we also had a bit of a positive mix in our basket of products that also contributed a bit towards the better margin.
Have you seen a return to maybe pre-pandemic levels, even in particularly non-consumer? I'm thinking QSR, I'm thinking restaurant and the like.
Yes, I would say, and we obviously measure this week to week, we reckon we're back to just above 90% of, let's call it, pre-COVID or normality. Mm-hmm. There's, however, a change in how the consumer buy, and there's a lot more takeouts than sit-downs, but I think we're back to just above 90, and we can see that in our sales figures.
The one point we probably raise every time we chat, imports, looking at the results, imports remain, frankly, massively high in our market.
But still, poultry products imported to this country still makes up 24% of total consumption. So it's still high. It's, however, 6% lower than the comparative period. That could have been due to the higher anti-dumping tariffs. It could have been to restricted trade or the lockdown, or also massive cost drivers in other countries. So we still regard 24% of local consumption as fairly high imports, and that's of total poultry products. So it's still a concern. We obviously, at the time of the master plan with Mr. Minister Patel, said whatever we import less, we will make up in local consumption. So Astral, as part of the poultry fraternity, has done its bit with regard to expansion, reinvestment. And we also, during this period, created 350 additional permanent jobs. And our expansion is not done yet. We plan to expand by another approximately 8% over the next year. So we will bump up our weekly processing numbers to about 6.2 million birds a week. And a year ago, we were at about 5.5. So a nice investment for the country, and it's paying off.
The feed division, I mean, we've mentioned maize, and of course, maize is yellow maize prices are, I mean, they're at, I want to say record levels, but certainly they're at very high levels. And that hurts the feed division, but you still manage to pick up a revenue. Slight squeeze on margins, but you're managing to pass a lot of the increases from maize onto your customers.
Yes, the feed industry historically works on a rand per ton margin and not on a percentage. So it's normally raw material plus the production cost plus a small margin. And we've been able to successfully pass that on to the external market. But one should also just remember that 60% of that volumes is in-house. So our poultry division take that knock, and they have to go and recover it.
How much is feed a big cost in your poultry division? Obviously, there's staff, there's all of that, but as well, there's administrative services, there's power. What is feed? I mean, is it the big cost?
Feed is now, as of this morning, if we take the latest Chicago prices that we had to buy it today at almost 4,800 rand a ton. I never thought I'd mention that, but it's there. So feed is now 70% of our total cost to produce 1 kilo of meat. And then, of course, the other big contributors is distribution and energy and our wage bill. That makes up top four, and that's close on 90% of our total cost. So, you know, our energy costs make up about 10% of our total, and that year on year, that cost is up by 16%. And our distribution cost, which is about another 10% of our business, is up 29%. And that's mainly due to the higher diesel prices.
Yeah, and reports on this morning that we're going to get even more petrol price increases at the end of this month. But 70% feed, that's a giant number, and means that, you know, watch that yellow maize price. Chris Kutter, CEO Astral, always appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm going to be chatting with Vikas Lotterhan, Calgary M3 CEO. They had results out for the year end February. A good set of numbers. Revenue up just over 50% at $1.3 billion. Headline earnings per share up just over 105 cents versus a loss of 15 cents in the previous year. NAV trading at asset value 793. Debt coming down and gross profit margins at 21.3%, which is in that range they're targeting. Because appreciate the early morning time. I remember we chatted, it would have been 6 months ago, it would have been around October, just as your interims came out. And there was certainly a quiet sense of confidence that you and your team had navigated through what had been a tough couple of years that truthfully stretched to pre-COVID. And this full year numbers, I think, really give credence to Calgary M3 out of the woods and firing on all cylinders.
Thanks. Morning, Simon. Yeah, we are quite proud of the set of numbers. It's been a long cycle coming. It's been a long turnaround. Everyone can remember that our challenge wasn't COVID. Our challenge actually started long before COVID. Mm-hmm. But I think with all the restructuring measures we put in place, it's now starting to pay off. And what's quite interesting on the set of results is you'll see that it's not only about the revenue number.
Yeah.
We increase our GP margin. Although revenue is up 50%, our administrative expense only up 3%. And then, of course, as with all the debt reductions we've done, the interest also has to start coming down rapidly. So all in all, I believe a good income statement. And then, of course, the balance sheet, we believe, is at the strongest point ever. If you look at the net debt to equity, if you look at liabilities, if you look at the way it's structured, as well as the liquidity on balance sheet of just short of $600 million.
Yeah, that net debt to equity down 2.71 from 0.99. You mentioned gross profit margins. They're now at 21.3. Your target's 20 to 25. So you're in that zone, but you're at the sort of low end. I mean, I imagine part of your plan is to try and get it now sort of closer toward that 25% level.
Yeah, we'll definitely get closer to that 25% in the next year or two. And the one benefit of that 25% and the range between 20 and 25 do give us, I know there's some concern in the market of what if interest rates starts going up, what's the effect on the consumer. Now, the first argument I always have is just bear in mind that on a 500,000 rand house, a 1% or 100 basis point increase is only 313 rand per month. But then if affordability really becomes an issue in terms of us, the sustainability challenge is, then we can always give some of that margin back, remain above 20%, but have at least a sustainable business.
Ah, okay, because that's going to be my next question. Okay, so you can actually take a little bit, gives you that wiggle room on margin pressure. Because I was also, I mean, do you have much ability to almost, I don't know, you work across distinct income groups and on the different projects, and you get some flexibility in perhaps maybe building and sort of targeting lower cost units?
Correct, yeah. So we have some ability. There's quite a few levers we can pull. And what also, as you just mentioned, we're cross income groups. So we work from, if you look at the open market units, just about 400,000 until about 1.3 million properties in the same project.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability of that is you can follow the market. Because generally your market pressure is not the same at the same time on your 1.3 million market and on your 400,000 market, if I can call it that. Depending where you are on the economic cycle, depending on where you are on the interest rate cycle and the like. So we believe we've got enough levers to pull to now have to produce profits on a sustainable manner.
Your Memorial Parks, which was it's a newer venture for you, although by now it's nicely bedded down. Still small within the bigger Calgo group, but a nice addition and operating well and efficiently and making profit for the group.
Yeah, so it's still small in the group, but we must always see why we established a business. So firstly, to fill a need to restore the dignity in a better place. But what you'll also see is maybe it seems smaller now in the group because we had such a rapid growth in the development business.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, you'll see that our target's always been that business because it's more stable in terms of revenue and cash generation, to have that business are able to pay for the monthly administrative and interest rate bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that business is already at 72%. Mm-hmm. Of our group administrative costs from free cash flow. So the addition there is more from a risk perspective, which gives the development business, which are more lumpier but always will be bigger business, more flexibility to operate without the pressure of administrative and interest costs.
Gotcha. Okay, I hadn't thought of it that way, and I like that. Yeah, as you say, so 70% en route to getting it. So that kind of means the business can pay its bills every month, and then, as you say, the more lumpy part can carry on operating. We'll leave that there. That's Vikas Lakhotan, CEO of Colgrey M3, talking results to end February. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we were chatting with Mia Kruger from Kruger International about that MTN trading update for quarter ending March. Strong update, particularly on their banking, what do they call it, fintech money business. I had written off, I think many really had. The question was, is it a stock you like? Is it a stock that you hold? Over half of you are holding and loving it. And absolutely, results have been spectacular for that share, and it's done incredibly well. Six of you preferring Vodacom. About a quarter say, no thanks, no telcos in your portfolio. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. And thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow when we're talking with Baldwin.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.